Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of this year's Summer Rewind playlist. That's right, for the month of August, we're rewinding to some of my favorite past episodes that are all about sustainable agriculture, local food economies, and self-sufficiency. This week's episode is a favorite throwback of mine with Anthony Lennon of the Peterborough Food Shop. When we first talked for this episode back in July of last year, Anthony's shop had been open a month and things were brand new, but his passion for helping people access an amazing range of local foods, everything from produce to meat to flour, dried beans and locally canned goods, has only increased in the last year. He and his wife Sam now offer kombucha as well, so if you're in the area, get in there and enjoy what this region has to offer in every season. And if you're not from around here, listen in to hear the beauties of eating seasonally and locally to you. Talk to you again soon in September. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Practically Zero Waste, a podcast for making zero waste living as practical as possible. I hope you're all doing so very well in this last week of plastic-free July around the world. Today's conversation, I sit down with Anthony Lennon of the Peterborough Food Shop. This incredible store stocks local products from local farmers and businesses. Like, super local. Not just Canada, not just Ontario, but Peterborough County. Who knew so much greatness came from our little patch of country? We talk how eating local can help save the planet and how preventing food waste is easier than you think. If you want to hear more from the Practically Zero Waste pod, you can help get the word out by leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. You just scroll to the bottom of the app and hit as many stars as you like, or head to anchor.fm/practicallyzerowaste and hit the support button. Let's go.
Hi, Anthony.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going well.
Good. We are sitting in your super awesome brand new store. How long has this been around for?
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah, June 10th, 2019.
So, tell me about life before Food Shop.
I've always been in food, even since I was a kid. I looked forward to helping out for Christmas dinners, Thanksgiving dinners. It was always my job to grind carrots and whatnot.
Grind carrots?
Yeah, like, you know, the meat grinders on the attached to the countertop?
Table, yeah.
So my background is Finnish.
Okay. And
so there's a lot of casseroles in the Finnish culture. And one of them is a grated carrot with rice and milk. And so you slow cook the rice with the milk to make a porridge, and then you put the carrots in. Wow. So my job when we came over for Christmas dinner would be to grate those.
Yeah.
I'd often come over the day before to help my grandmother.
That's awesome.
And I would do all the little jobs that were safe for my little hands.
Yeah.
And then throughout, I was always responsible for making my own food as a kid and whatnot, like my lunches during summer holidays, even during school.
Okay.
So it's something I never found as a chore. And then as I got older, I became a chef. And even my first girlfriend that I lived with, she remembered that I always did all the cooking.
Yeah.
And that it was always good. And that for me, I don't even remember that. I just always did it. So I'm now 45. Cooking as a career is a little tougher, I find. Just it's tough on the body and long hours. Yeah,
lots of
standing. Yeah, and just, you know, you're hunched over a cutting board.
Yeah.
Which I love, and I could do it all day, every day. It's just, it's tiring on the body. And one drawback of being a chef is that you're standing over an open flame that is natural gas, and there's no exhaust system. Like, there's one above your head, but you're breathing in those fumes 12 hours a day. And
make you a little loopy by the end of the day?
Well, not by the end of the day, but I feel that by their 40s, I've met a lot of chefs in their 40s that are crazy. So I don't know if they started crazy, but, you know, I find the ones that cook for a long, long time are all crazy. So,
wow.
In a good way, but still.
A little wacky.
Yes.
Makes the food taste better.
Yeah.
Cool. So you've been a chef and you were working in that profession for a little while. And then how did the food shop come about?
In 2008, I was walking around downtown Peterborough and I was complaining to my friend. We'd both gotten off work at 11:30 at night. But even before my shift, there was nowhere that I could buy anything that was local.
Right.
And I was trying to do a dinner for people, local food, just at my house. It was 12 people. And so it took me a while because I had to do it in between shifts. I had to call people and I ended up buying some local, but then because it was sort of difficult, I just went what I could find that was a little bizarre and odd even.
Yeah.
So, you know, I found some turtles to buy, and which some people might go, oh, what are you doing? But they were farmed turtles for eating.
For eating, yeah.
It wasn't, you know.
Save the turtles. Yeah. Oh, I'll save them.
Yes, don't worry about it. So, and I was walking around and we saw where Sam's Deli is on Hunter Street. That place had just come up. And I got a tour of it, and that is where, when I walked in there, I was like, this is something I really want to do.
Wow.
But then I went right back to cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't, I gave it a second thought, a third thought. But I was still very much dedicated to cooking all the time. And then, as I said, you just get a little older. So I actually I managed a Starbucks for 6 years after my cooking career.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is very different. But if it's air conditioned, you get 3 weeks holidays a year.
Nice.
It's not as satisfying, I found. It's very much a large corporation and they source cheapest. But it gave me a lot of experience in sort of a retail mindset and working on Lansdowne Street, maybe more and more. Miss working downtown. And working with local ingredients. Because as a chef, people would drop stuff off from time to time.
Yeah, so when you were cooking as a chef, were you trying to prioritize local ingredients?
Sometimes when my wife and I owned a restaurant and I had some people that would come in on a weekly basis, but it was difficult because we've never owned a car. So it is difficult sometimes to reach out to people.
Yeah.
And not everybody always wants to deliver. And I did feel it's a little different. It was different in 2005 and 2006 about local. Is that even though I tried, it was very much like it just seems now you turn around and everywhere you look is that there's little farms popping up of young people.
Right.
You know, it seems like the culture is different than it was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And that could just be me being more immersed in it.
Right. You might be more aware.
Yeah, I might be more aware, but I did put my feelers out always as a chef if anybody local wants to sell to me. And
yeah.
So I tried sometimes, but also my menu was very, like I had inherited a menu that.
Right, that you had to work with.
You know, I changed some things around and I brought some stuff in definitely, even just from local butchers as opposed to, you know, the big mighty Sysco. But a lot of times people don't get the idea that it's okay not to eat tomatoes in January and February. That makes it more special. You know,
that's true.
You know, but people want that stuff all the time. And the big companies want you to order from them all the time.
Yeah.
So if you say, well, actually only for 6 months out of the year, they don't look too kindly on you.
Exactly. Yeah. How do you start a business like this?
The beginning was kind of scary because you have to reach out to people about a business model that is everywhere, but not in Peterborough exactly what I was talking about to them.
Okay.
And so for a lot of people, I'm like, maybe in June, I might have something that we can work together on, but I can't guarantee you that it could be even this year because I'm not sure how it's going.
Wow, yeah.
And so a lot of the feedback was, you know, I got enough emails, no thank you, that's fine. And so that was a little discouraging because I was like, what if people even want to sign up?
Right.
So then you've all of a sudden have 10 people signed up, but then it's, well, I can't just work with 10 people because I won't have enough stuff.
Yeah.
So then you're waiting for all those other emails. And so I was in that limbo for a bit of time. And so I actually had to do a second round of emails.
Yeah.
And some people had said, oh, I'm so sorry. I thought I had reached out. This is a great idea. I'm in.
And maybe they had to like get closer to the season too, to be able to.
For a lot of people that was, and some of them, a lot of them, especially the growers needed to meet me in person.
Yes.
Figure out what I was doing because they don't want to get stung by me saying, oh yeah, I'm going to buy vegetables from you. Oh, this is going to be so great. But I've talked to 10 people. And I've got, say, 10 people coming through and I'm trying to undercut. Whereas I stuck with three farmers. The first three farmers basically that got back to me. But I only had
particular products?
I looked at lists and I picked ones that had crossover, but also unique to their farm. So that way I could strengthen myself with, say, greens that everybody has. And if someone doesn't have enough, and they all understood that I had to hedge myself as well.
Yeah. That way you can feel comfortable getting a little bit of everything from a few different places.
Yeah. And I was very clear about that idea that I was going to have three main suppliers just for my farmers so that I would be able to be a big enough buyer that I could be consistent, but only three so I can have a personal relationship with each one.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can go to their farm and it's like, yeah, hey, I've been buying from you all season. But as I said, most people, they wanted to, especially the growers though, as I said, they wanted to meet me. People with the packaged food, it was good enough for email back and forth. There's not as much turmoil in if I'm buying four cases of stuff off you. The likelihood is I'm going to buy another four cases off you and no one else is going to come in and undercut because those prices are fairly stable throughout the year.
Yeah, and they're a little bit more of a unique product. The stuff
that's
packaged.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Not like zucchinis or greens or something
like that. And so the big fear there is that I promise that I'll buy zucchinis from you all year, but then all of a sudden the next person comes in and gives me it for 1 cent cheaper.
Have you had that where other people?
I've had other people coming in and trying to offer their stuff, and I'm like, sorry, this is what I've got.
Yeah.
This is who I'm with. If something changes with them, I'll let you know.
Yeah, that's good.
Even my meat people, you know, and I've been very transparent with everybody as well that this is how my plan is and that if, say, your flock dies for some crazy reason, I will go source somewhere else because I still need to run my business, but I'll be transparent with that person saying,
This is why
Farm
here.
A is the one that I'm dealing with always. So if you don't mind, if I can buy off you for a season. Obviously, that would never happen, but it can happen that there can be things going wrong. But I want to make sure that I'm with these people for as long as I'm open so that it becomes a partnership. I'm no longer a sole proprietor, say, is that we're all in this together.
Yeah, more like a co-op.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit of a lay of the land here. So for anybody who doesn't know what the food shop is yet, you're kind of like an ongoing market.
That was the sort of the beginning of the idea. But I am sourcing a lot of people who aren't at markets.
Exactly.
So it has grown bigger, or just it's a market extended.
Exactly. So it's like the farmer's market. But all week long, you're not stuck with the, I work Saturday morning, guess I can't go to the market. Or I work, even during the Wednesday market that's downtown. And you take debit. Like, there's just...
Well, yeah, that's
like,
the...
That's such
plastic.
A big thing. Yeah. Like, it's so hard to make sure that I get to the market Saturday morning with cash. The number of times that I've had to go to an ATM and get dinged, like, a $3 charge because I forgot to go to the bank before going to the market. Like, this is... And the other thing that I love about it, so you walk in here and it looks like a grocery store. All of your greens are together. All of your sauces are together. All of your cheese is together. It's not like I have to like do a couple of loops. Nothing against the farmer's market because I love the farmer's market. Yeah. Everybody should go. But if you have a place like this where you can just go and shop like
stuff.
It's a grocery store.
Yeah.
Pay for it like it's a grocery store and still get local food. That's amazing.
Thank you. No, and absolutely. I mean, I love walking around the farmer's market because it's all the different people there and it's the hustle and the bustle and it's really exciting.
Yeah.
But it is that thing where it's like, okay, I'm going here. Oh, no, right. I got to go over there. And,
and their price for broccoli was this and their price for this. And I hate that.
And I mean, one thing that I like to offer also is that I've never been a grower of any food whatsoever. And so one thing that I'm learning quickly, but some people have asked me, well, how do I grow that? I'm like, I don't know. Go to the market and talk to the people who do it full time. But where I can fill in the gap is sometimes those people aren't cooks. So they don't know all the different ways to prepare the food.
Exactly.
And so I'm as passionate as about the zucchini as they are for growing it.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you how it's done. I can't tell you what kind of weather you need, but I can tell you what to do with it, how to, you know, how to store it and how to cook it and how everything. And so that's where that gap is filled. But I would never want people to come here without ever visiting there because this is such a great opportunity to, you know, when you can meet the producer, then it's
so cool.
Yeah.
And you probably care more about your food when you know the farmer, you meet them, you can interact, you can memorize where you got your stuff from. And it just feels like really local that way.
Yep.
This way, I just shop here and I know that it's local because I've been told that it's local.
And I will tell you which farm you bought it from.
Exactly.
And it is listed on the prices, but
absolutely.
It is such a different, because you're only seeing me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll more say, oh yeah, I bought it from Anthony,
as
opposed to I bought it from Trevor or Scott or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how local is local? What does local mean to you?
Peterborough County.
Okay.
I would say anything that is a comfortable driving distance, you know, maybe 45 minutes.
Okay.
An hour max, but an hour gets into Toronto. So then all of a sudden you're dealing with I could buy everything from Toronto and I would still be considered local. So I would say more that local is somewhere that you'd be more likely to bump into them.
Okay. Yeah.
In downtown Peterborough.
Yeah.
Or downtown Bob Cajun, downtown Campbellford, you know,
like
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're your neighbor. They're the person that you might get upset with because they're shoveling their snow onto yours, you know, or they might be the person that you're borrowing your lawnmower from, you know.
Yeah.
It's more that's what I feel is local, is that person, I would have a direct relationship with them and you would have an opportunity to see that person here. It's not being delivered by, you know, Peterborough County is pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's your cutoff?
I haven't found it yet because I don't want to sort of sit there and sometimes if you are firm about something, people will then find that as an area to challenge you on.
Okay, yeah.
I haven't looked at a map, but I mean, you know, Campbellford, I have, you know, stuff from Campbellford. So again, that could be, if it's 48 minutes, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that idea. It's not a concrete idea. My plan shortly is to draw a map on the wall anyways to show you where it's coming from.
That's great.
So that would be the best answer to that, is that come back in maybe a month or so and you'll see. The thing I always suggest to people too is if you think it's too far away, then you don't need to buy that. You can buy something else that is right down the street.
Exactly.
You know, because each person that I'm buying from typically is a small person. It could be a husband and wife or a brother and a sister, some cousins and stuff that are making something that they're really passionate about.
Yeah.
And so you would be able to then just call them or stop by their house and say, hey, I loved your product.
Yeah. The idea, I guess, of local is completely relative because every time you say local, it means within a 30-mile radius. Yeah. For somebody shopping on North American continent, like exclusively that could be like shopping local. Or it's I don't leave Lakefield. Like that's your Peterborough.
Yeah, you can be, I don't leave my backyard except for the few things like toilet paper and toothpaste.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, local is such a unique idea.
Exactly.
And because of where we're situated is, you know, we're so close to Rice Lake.
Yeah.
But if you look at the north part of Peterborough County, it's farther away.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where it's kind of blurry, but you'll know it when you see it. You go, hey, that's not local. You know, that's from, you know, north of Bancroft.
Or that's not local. That's from the other side of Toronto or from BC or.
Yeah. You know, you'll know it, you know, you'll be able to make that judge and, you know, that judgment. And I sort of pick, I mean, not owning a car, if I can bike to them, then that's sort of my, and most of the people other than Lunar Rhythms and Janetville, they're pretty far. That'd be a good bike ride, but you know, I can bike to Omimi. I can bike to Young's Point.
Yeah.
You know, I can bike to pretty much everywhere that I'm representing here.
In less than a day.
100%. You know, and I'm not going to die at the end of it just to prove I could do it.
Yeah.
You know, I will, you know, enjoy myself at the end of that trip. So.
Yeah. It wouldn't be that far. Amazing. So why is it important environmentally?
Well, I mean, first off, the journey.
Yeah.
So the amount of gasoline or petroleum or whatever you want to call it that is used to get an avocado here.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, a great example, and this is one of the things that spurred me years ago, is I was working at a restaurant in Peterborough, and we ran out of sprouts, like alfalfa sprouts. And we got another shipment in from our distributor, and it was all from Israel.
Wow.
And I was like, why are we shipping from that? I don't care. Like, Israel can grow as many as they want, but why are we shipping that?
Yeah.
When really we could grow it in our basement.
Yeah.
And so I was amazed that because you're dealing with global economy.
Yeah.
And so these places are buying mass amounts that if one part of it fails, they just immediately go to the next part. And so there was a shortage with the usual supplier. So they just said, okay, that's cool. We're going to buy, you know, 80 tons of it from Israel.
Yeah. And it means that you're never out of something. You never have to go without.
Yeah. And that's what makes things beautiful is when you don't have it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's what makes strawberries so tasty.
Oh my gosh, strawberries.
You know.
So good. I don't buy them any other time of the year.
Well, I was watching a show Jamie Oliver had, and he used strawberries as an example because he said as a kid, they used to wait and wait and wait until they were ripe.
Mm-hmm.
And they would freak out and eat as many as they could in the first like 3 weeks or 3 days.
Yeah.
And then he said, nowadays his kids and all the kids are like, strawberries, whatever. They're not excited because you eat them and they taste horrible in February.
Yeah.
So it gives you a bad feeling about them. Yeah. And so they're like, it's not a big deal. And so when you eat things out of season all the time, the stuff in season becomes less glorious.
Mm-hmm. And you don't even know when something is in season because it's all around all the time.
Well, I have a lot of people coming in asking me, how come you're not carrying that? I said, well, it's not in season. Well, when is the season? It's summer.
Yeah.
I said, well, but things come up through different times. And
like you don't currently have tomatoes because tomatoes have not yet ripened.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's something that I'm really excited to show customers.
Yeah.
And there's the people who are in the know and they wait just like I do
mm-hmm.
for that stuff, you know, and what I've started doing, which isn't a new thing in the world, but you know, I turn it all into sauce, like my tomatoes in September and October. So I make tons of tomato sauce. I make mm-hmm. salsa, sun-dried tomatoes. I work really hard in September and October and I process a lot of food on top of working full time. And I love it. Because then when I'm eating it in February, I think back to the time where I was going, why am I doing this to myself? Why?
Or in my case, I think back to, oh my gosh, I can't believe I grew these tomatoes or
well,
I got
when
these
I, yeah,
from the farmer's market.
When I'm buying like 8 bushels of tomatoes, it becomes like punishing. Especially when it hits like 30 degrees for 5 days in a row and I'm working 8 hours a day and coming home and processing tomatoes for 4 hours, it gets like, why?
Because it tastes amazing in wintertime.
And I'm thinking of Winter Anthony looking outside going, where is...
Future me is going to
want really, really going to love you.
So. And from a pack of trees point of view, that's something that I did this past summer for the first time was I packaged a bunch of, I canned a bunch of tomatoes, tomato sauce, salsa. And I didn't have to buy those things in tins this year. I was able to, I got like January or February. Yep. So
I'm still going strong. I made way too much, so.
Really?
Yeah, and I actually had a customer come in who was looking for sun-dried tomatoes, and I said, well, I have some from my private stash.
My goodness, so you sent out of my business.
Yeah, so I brought it in the next day, and I bought some other stuff, and I gave it as a gift, because I knew him. I know he would do good things with it. And that is one thing that I do, too, is when I overprocess, like with the corn, like I buy dozens and dozens of corn, and I freeze it all.
Oh, you so like I cut it freeze off. It on the cob?
No, I freeze it off the cob, and I break it down so it's individual kernels.
How do you break it down into its individual kernels?
I'll just rub it in my hands, kind of just lightly, and it all breaks apart. And then I take
before it's cooked or after it's cooked?
Before it's cooked. And so then I'm not weak.
Oh.
And then I take the cobs.
Yeah.
And then I make a little corn stock out of it.
Oh, corn stock.
And then
is
I
so
freeze
good.
It.
Yeah.
And then I can have corn soup.
Okay, stock. So I have to take the corn kernels off of the cob.
Yeah, you just take a knife right down.
Before I cook it.
Yep.
Okay, I will do that.
And they are perfect.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've always wondered how the heck you do that.
Yeah, if you continue to be a customer here, then you see things come in, I will talk to you about it.
Yeah.
I will show you. I'll probably invite you to my house to process stuff so I can show you right there.
We can can together at the end of the summer.
Yeah, I love communal food stuff. So,
yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
And it cuts my workload down.
I had this idea, so maybe I'll do this for you, is coming up with little recipe suggestions based on what you have in the store every season, every week, or whatever. So like, if you wanted to exclusively shop here as your one grocery store, so maybe you wouldn't be able to buy milk or...
I'm getting milk in next week.
Baking soda.
Baking soda, yes.
Salt, I don't know, like things like that. But if this was your main grocery shop, what could you make for a meal? You've got radishes, you've got beets with the greens, you've got the goat cheese, you've got... I don't know what else you're hearing that you can throw all together into an amazing warm goat cheese salad.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I do that. I do that on a verbal level many times.
Yeah. You'd be like, I would put this, and this together. And here you go. You can have these potatoes here are great for French fries. Make some French fries with some amazing barbecue sauce from this company and these sausages and go grab some buns from Electric City. There you go. Like, that would be so much fun.
Yes.
Not to like... put more work on you. I'll do it. I'll come in once a week to get my groceries.
Hour a week.
Yeah. There you go. Tell me about some of your products here. Some of your products that maybe people wouldn't think that they could buy locally to Peterborough.
Amazingly, that is a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't realize that it doesn't have to get shipped in because it's made here as well.
Yeah. We grow things in Canada too.
Yeah, a lot of it. Well, I mean...
And Southern Ontario is also quite a great climate for growing a very big variety of things.
Yeah.
So it's not just like we live in super Northern Ontario or Northern Canada and
there's little
grows.
Solid enough growing season here.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an interesting question because nothing for me was ever surprising. So I don't know what's surprising. I mean, the mushrooms that I'm carrying, there's pink oyster and lion's mane. Next week I'm getting golden oyster.
Okay.
I also have shiitake mushrooms.
Yeah.
And so I find more, it's the varieties as opposed to the actual mushrooms themselves.
Right. People know that mushrooms grow.
But... Yeah. But the fact that I'm carrying those ones, they go, wow, where are these from? And if they don't make it to the farmer's market ever, they're not as familiar with what is locally produced.
Right.
So for me, because I've spent years going to it, there's nothing that I go, oh yeah, well, hey, that's pretty cool. I mean, last year, I don't carry it yet, but I'm trying my hardest to get it in here in the fall is wild rice, which I didn't realize grew locally. I always thought it was something that grew over there.
Well, Rice Lake.
Yeah, I understand that. Actually, I was only taught that like, I think 3 days ago, and I was like, Rice Lake, of course. So...
I mean,
you just take it for granted.
In the shape of a grain of rice.
Yeah, you know? maybe a rice boat fell in it. I don't know.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, sometimes the most obvious things are...
Yeah. Tell me about your flour, because...
Actually, yeah, that is something that the styles... there's the emmer, which is a farro wheat, which is ancient, like 8,000 years old. It's one of the first ones that humans used. Excellent. I was really excited to see that, and I've used it a bit. Of course, Red Fife I carry, but that's one of the backbones of, I guess, Canada back in the day.
So Red Fife wheat
is
local.
Yeah, and I guess it was developed locally.
Wow.
So that's something that, you know, if you want to do local food, that would
be
one.
And is it ground locally too?
Yep, everything's done out in Douro.
Wow.
So, yeah. And then I also, the other flour is spelt and buckwheat.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
And they're all organic. So a lot of people mistake local and organic. They think the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, not true.
And not true at all. But oftentimes if you're dealing with small growers, they are usually organic because they can't do all the other stuff.
And usually organic, though not always like with the big certification.
Very expensive to do that.
To be certified organic. So if you're shopping at a local farmer's market and you're talking with your local farmers and they are not certified organic, chances are they may still be organic. You have to ask them, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, but in general, most local small farmers aren't using a lot of pesticides.
Well, I mean, you can't afford to.
Yeah, and it's expensive.
Yeah, and I mean, without getting overly political, and you can edit this out.
Oh, yeah. I'll probably keep it all in just because.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
For me, organic is very class-based anyways, is that organic becomes one more thing that people can say, oh, you're not buying organic.
Yeah.
And you can't, because poor people can't afford it.
It is expensive.
And
yeah.
So you're pricing, because how else do you put food, like if we're all buying the same bananas, how do you go, well, if I'm eating the same as them, how am I different?
Yeah.
And so I really see that, because I see a lot of people that I've dealt with over the years, I can sort of see that idea that, and because it costs so much to certify organic, oftentimes there are only huge farms that have like massive monocultures.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't
Which
realize the damage.
Soil health.
It is. It's just the damage that organic food.
And for like local insects and stuff too, like having monocultures.
Yeah. And so, and I really find that that's that sort of, you know, and I've ranted to many people over the years about organic and greenwashing products, is that I find it's all in one, and you just stamp 40% more on it, and then you've all of a sudden you've created a class system with your food. And I think food is there to, obviously I make money on food, but it's there to share, it's there to show people how you love them.
Yeah,
like that's what food's about. It creates all the culture of a country. And so when you're pulling it apart like that, I get very frustrated. And so I'm very quick. Some people, oh, is this all organic? I'm like, no, it's not organic, but it's local.
Yeah.
And that's the more important part. Because if it's 22 minutes in the back of a minivan.
Yeah.
Like,
to get here. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're also supporting the person, like it's their family.
Yeah.
It's their income. It's their livelihood.
Yeah.
You know, and if you want to ship from California, then... You know, I don't even get into that part, because there's the whole other system there of, I mean, I understand that you're also migrant workers and stuff, but you underpay workers and it just becomes this massive.
One time I heard that, I don't know all of the details, but that strawberries are often grown in Quebec and then picked, like the whole plant is dug up. It is made dormant by putting it in coolers and it's shipped to California and it's planted again in the warmer weather so that it has a longer growing season, and the plant thinks that it's been dormant and then continues to like
I wouldn't put it past anybody, which
and
is insanity.
So then you have like Quebec strawberries, but they're not. They were grown in California and then shipped back up here, but the plant came from, anyway, just.
Think of the journey.
The amount of like fossil fuels involved in shipping that back and forth across the continent. It's just stupid.
Yeah,
just
it's
eat them in season.
Yeah.
Just find a local strawberry farm and eat them in season.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, things were seasonal.
Yeah.
Like, this was only in the 80s. It was like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Things were mostly seasonal.
Which I totally understand why society and humanity has been like, hey, I can get like a mango anytime I want. I love tropical fruit. I love all these different things. Sure, a global economy, but we do lose that appreciation for flavor of something. Like having a tomato that is in season, and there's just nothing. You could just eat that for supper.
You don't have to do
so
anything
good.
To it.
Yeah.
You just put it on your plate.
Yeah.
And that's one of the flavors.
Yeah.
And then if you put a little bit of salt and pepper on it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And
crazy.
Then a little basil and then some cheese or something.
A little bit of goat cheese from Craftsman's.
Yeah. You're just layering great flavor after great flavor.
What is it like operating with all of your farm vendors? Is it commission based? Is it like, do you buy a quantity up front and just hope that you sell it?
I purchase it at a percentage. I get them to set the market price for me, because I don't want to go so high that my market shoppers would come here and go, why are you charging so much more? So we work together to figure out prices that are good for both of us to survive.
Yeah.
I do have some commission based items. We're still figuring that out, because I want to get off commission so that I can, it's more like hard goods and whatnot, but I want to be able to give those people the money up front.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So that way it's better for them. But a lot of people, they've been really kind, knowing that I'm a new business, that if their product's here, they get the exposure. If I sell it, then it's great. And then once a month I pay them out.
Yeah.
And then hopefully I can just buy it all. And that way they've got money in their pocket. And then some of the farmers, you know, have done the odd little bit of trade here and there. If they see a product that they want to give it a try. Yeah, I might just get a couple heads of lettuce or something for maple syrup or something like that. Or So
I love that.
I'm sure that the tax people would hate that. But
the tax people don't listen to this podcast. Yeah,
thank God. And if you are listening, turn off before this.
It's such a great mixture of products. And we've kind of been all over the place with this episode, but the variety of things. You've got meat, dairy, vegetables, condiments.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've also got edible flowers. They make your food look so beautiful on top of everything else. As you said, cheese. I've got goat cheese, eggs. I've got a couple of hot sauces, organic flour. Man, I've got a bunch of woodworking stuff.
Yeah, we've got maple syrup. We've got like...
soap. Well, I mean, honey. And then coffee, tea.
Yeah, and those are local roasting. Yeah. And they grow their beans in
the they grow in Colombia and ship here.
Grown in Peterborough, but they are roasted in Peterborough.
Roasted, blended, packaged.
Yeah, same with like some of your sauces and stuff. There's like a mango curry sauce that's not growing in Ontario, but the company is local producing it. And
I mean, you can generally guarantee that local businesses are going to be also hiring
local,
and they're going to be paying their taxes locally and doing all that stuff
hopefully
locally.
Hopefully fair wages and so, all of those things that just kind of fall into this low waste packaging. We're talking about shopping local, low carbon footprint, ethical treatment of workers, like all of these things flow together and become this.
And they really do,
They're important.
And then at the end of it all, flavor is better.
Yeah.
You know.
Because they're done in season.
So it's, there's benefits right through. As we keep saying, is that if you only get it a month out of the year, the excitement that comes with getting it the following year.
What is your tip for people as they learn to live without in the off seasons?
It will enjoy the things that you do have. I mean, you can also process stuff in the season. So you have frozen strawberries and they won't lose a lot by that time. But it is enjoy what's in front of you and not what you don't have, because squash can be made 50 different ways. If you're a vegetarian, I mean, you can still get greens throughout the year.
Yeah.
I might not be able to carry them sort of late February and March just because of the growing in a
greenhouse.
Thank you.
Yeah. You had the gesture there.
Yeah. So. But we have a little UV thing at home. And this year we grew two lettuces that we couldn't keep up with.
That's great.
And it's just a little UV hydroponic in it.
Yeah.
It's teeny tiny.
That's fine.
But you can also do
grow lights to good use.
Yeah.
Grow some lettuce.
Yeah, grow lettuce. And it just keeps going and going and going and going.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so much to go with, is that don't focus on what you're going without.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that a lot of people do with everything in their life, is that rather than live in the moment and enjoy it, they're going, but what about, I wish I really had.
Yeah.
And, you know, life becomes looking for tomorrow and missing yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know. And
what about today?
Yeah. And that kind of, it bleeds through everything, from your food to your job and everything in your life, is that, you know, if you just stop and go, wow, I have potatoes and carrots and squash on my plate with some locally raised meat, or if you're a vegetarian, whatever, you know, there's some people I'm hearing are making like tempeh and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Locally.
Yeah, we can grow soybeans in Ontario. So there you go.
So that can be something that if there's enough of a demand, we could get something moving here.
That could be cool.
Yeah.
What are your plans for winter?
Well, carrots, squash, all that stuff that carries you through the winter. Two of them will be growing me greens until maybe the middle of February.
Perfect.
But there is a lot of stuff that's available. I mean, there's radishes. There's all kinds of stuff.
Are you going to sell your canned stuff? Are you gonna...
Maybe. Well, I think I might do that to some preferred customers.
Else. Yeah, find somebody who's doing it like on a business scale.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, preferred customers. So, I mean, you know, if you're still coming in here in November, which I assume you will.
I'll be here.
Then there might be an extra little item in your bag, because I'd be like, hey, I just made this. Give it a try.
Cool.
Give it a try. So that's an incentive.
Come on back.
Yeah.
Do you have any hopes and dreams, or
potentially teaching people how to cook and whatnot?
Ooh, I like that idea.
Because this space is big enough that I should be able to move stuff around.
Yeah.
And I could do it on site, or I mean, even off site, having the people come through.
Could we do a zero waste chef night thing where you teach people how to cook with food scraps and like?
Yeah, I try to do that every day of my life.
Oh my gosh, me too. Okay, cool.
People get all rangy about maybe a wrinkly potato or...
Or like if the tops of the broccoli florets are turning yellow and stuff, just chop them off. Yeah.
Well, cook them.
Cook them.
Cook them.
Okay.
Cook them. I'm a big proponent of old vegetables.
Okay.
Because they get more flavorful.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, you might get, they might get a little tough.
There is a point when sometimes they stop.
It's tough for me to find that point, though.
Mold?
I just cut the mold off.
Yeah.
Obviously, not what I'm selling to people, but
not at all. The produce looks really great.
But you know, mushrooms are one of those things, especially, is that I like when they go past.
They're a little dry.
Yeah, wrinkled. And I like them when they get like that because they get so flavorful.
Got a different texture too.
Yeah, and they become, and I was watching, I forget what restaurant it is in Norway, I believe, but he uses only things that are old.
Wow.
No good. Nothing in my house, like I cook it.
Yeah.
And there's no stopping me.
Yeah, some people are, I've heard some people say, oh, I'm so proud of us for composting now. We put out like a bucket of compost every day, and I'm like, what are you throwing away? Like, I was realizing that, wow, I don't really... shouldn't my compost be more full at this point? We've been here like 9 months or something. But I was like, we don't really put out compost. Like, we use almost every bit.
I mean, if you really want to go hardcore about it too,
you
can take your you can take your carrot peels and your onion peels, make stalks out of it. Mm-hmm. So there really should be nothing you're composting almost.
Well, so then you've composted like the peels after you
the end result? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. But
so that would be the only composting.
Part,
but I mean, for
what's in there. It's usually like just the green part and the seeds from red pepper or something like that.
Yeah.
There's no pepper left on it. Even like sometimes a mini pepper grows within the bigger pepper. You can eat that.
100%. You can eat everything.
Okay.
Everything.
Separate podcast episode called You Can Eat It All.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about cooking.
Okay. I can save some nasty stuff for you. And I can say,
excellent.
See, look at this.
And we'll make it taste great.
Yeah. I refuse to. I mean, the odd time I will miss something because it'll get rotated in the fridge underneath. But yeah, I mean, even with the stuff that looks a little off, I mean, just puree it into a soup and you're good to go.
Yeah.
And like, there's so much. Because I can guarantee you that you would have no waste if there was no food.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, if you only had access to like
this much food in a day, that's it. I had a friend of mine, we were clearing off the table. So the rule in our house is that when you're done with your food, even if you haven't finished it, you put it back into the thing that it was made in, or we just pack it all together. You can take it home or I'll eat it, one or the other. And so he was taking the dishes and he went over to the garbage.
Trying to be helpful.
And I'm like, there's no food. And he goes, it's two scoops. We don't throw any food out whatsoever because I can turn it into stuff. It's already been on the table for an hour. I'm like, that's fine. And that shows food wealth to the point that people are out of touch.
Yeah.
You know?
Being out of touch with your food. You don't know.
And I mean, he's
so
gone through some hard times where he hasn't always had a lot of money, and I still watch him throw food out all the time.
Yeah, because it's just a lack of knowledge.
Food
about
waste.
How food works.
If you go to a restaurant, you're already paying three times the price of that food to begin with.
The service and the
prep then you take it home and throw it out. So then the cost becomes even greater.
Yeah.
And I talk to friends of mine also about responsible shopping in that shop every day or only buy. Don't be the pretend person. I'm a chef this week and I'm going to cook this and this because I saw it. Stick to what you know and buy one thing that's out of the ordinary, but stick to what you're doing. And the day at the end of a work day, you don't deserve to call ordered in food if you have a fridge full of food.
Right. Oh, that's a
at the end
one.
Of the next day, you also don't have, and now your leftovers from takeout and your food that you bought because you're a chef this week.
Tying up all your money in all of this food you're going to throw out.
And I tell people, you can raise your salary by 30% if you don't throw your food out, if you eat it all.
Mm-hmm.
And people can't translate money to food because I try to tell people any way that it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, if money's your thing, then that's how you save food.
Yeah.
If saving the environment is your thing, save food. If being a good person, like it doesn't matter.
Yes.
If you are a devout religious person in some way, your God or gods or everything made the food for you. Yeah, there's no world and belief system that it's okay to just throw out food. If you're an atheist and think we all just disappear, you owe it at least to the next generation to have food on their table.
Yeah.
So they can also die and turn into dirt. Like, there's nothing that you can attack that and say, well, this is a reason to throw out food.
This is going to be my audiogram for the week. Tell me about food and community and how you can, because I talk a lot about community on this podcast and how valuable it is to just get to know each other and get to know your neighbors and share things and not buy all the stuff and own all the stuff yourself. But how does food come into community and make the world a better place?
Well, it is the one thing that everybody shares
straight
across the board around the world.
Yeah.
Even if you don't speak the same language, it doesn't matter anything. We all eat three times a day. Hopefully, you know, some of us aren't as lucky. But a lot of the world eats a lot of food. And that is one of the things that creates your culture. Because if you look at all the different climates and what people eat. Mm-hmm. You know, it very much
depends on their seasonal local foods.
Yeah, you know, and you've got, I mean, as I said earlier, you know, my background is Finnish, so there's a lot of fish and there's a lot of very bland foods because there's not a lot of seasoning that goes on up there.
Right.
But it's like, you know, one or two strong flavors. Because of that, you'll see people in the north are often more stoic. Mm-hmm. Their food is more stoic. Because there's that time, but then there's that joyous period, like even in Canada here, that, you know, Peterborough is very fairly north because we suffer through, you
know, four separate seasons.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes the winter gets a little long. I love it because, you know, it makes every season is great.
Because you're
itself.
Eating your canned tomatoes and it's great.
Yes.
You can dream
and I love life.
Days.
So yeah. Every day is woohoo. So yeah. I don't care.
But you're right. Like down in a tropical country, down from Canada, like would have a whole like riot of color because it's like if they're not stoic people in tropical countries typically because they've just got this color.
And if you see that, you know, the way like those cultures are more expressive, their mm-hmm. food is more expressive, you know, and I see how that just all comes in. And then when it all melts together, you know, in a place like Peterborough where you have all those different things, is that it's such a great first step to meeting somebody.
Yeah.
Is saying, this is how I eat every day.
Yeah.
You should never be afraid of that and say, "Whoa, this is what you eat. Okay, great. Let me mm-hmm. give it a try." And I've always been that because it's exciting. You really get to see how someone is, you know, by eating their food.
Yeah.
And it really does. I strongly feel like that is it's your icebreaker. It's how you, and I trade food with my friends all the time for services rendered. If they're helping me do a dump run or if they're helping me paint or anything at all, I'm like, "Hey, come over for dinner."
Yeah.
And it's everybody's always happy to do that.
I love that.
I love that stuff.
I would love to have backyard chickens just so I can return favors with a dozen eggs.
Yeah.
Like every week. That would be my thing. I love that.
No, and there's a lot of people who would sign up for that.
Yeah.
And it's such a great way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's bigger than $20 or $3 mm-hmm. or, you know, even a thank you and a hug. It's like, yeah, that, you know, I give you a hug and some food.
Yeah. And it's not like I bought these from the grocery store because that doesn't seem special or local or anything. But like these are,
I have a direct connection to this food. Here you go.
I petted that chicken. It laid me those eggs.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thanks again for listening, everyone. If you want to hear more from Anthony, you can find him at the food shop on Water Street or on Instagram at PTBO Food Shop. Go in and grab some local, amazing products any day of the week and learn how to get the most out of the ingredients you buy. If you liked today's episode, you'd probably enjoy episode 23, The Farmer's Market, and episode 25, All About Community Gardens. You can find those in our archives wherever you get your podcasts. And here are a few reviews I've been getting from people on Apple Podcasts, which is so fun. Crazy for Essentials writes, "I'm committed to reducing the media noise in my life by unfollowing podcast purging accounts and reading a lot more books in place. But honestly, this is one podcast that stays with me. I'm hooked and I've learned so much. The flow of each podcast, the questions asked by the host, and the engagement by the guests makes this a pleasure to listen to. Thanks, Crazy for Essentials." And from Wajnat, "I found this podcast while looking for a way to start learning how to be more eco-conscious, and I'm glad I have downloaded it. A lot of information is informative, applicable to everyday life, and ensures that they ask questions about what someone who may not know much about the topic would like to know when starting out their zero waste journey." Thank you. That is all this week. Have a great rest of your plastic-free July, and talk to you soon.